Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a recipe or a question, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about successful outcomes. And you know we always talk about successful outcomes, but what really are they? Oh, people are saying that I didn't do it. And I was looking at all of the questions and the answers to already the questions that you guys know I'm going to ask. And you're right. I didn't do the second paragraph that I always say when we open. Hello. I guess this is a live show. So would you like to hear it now for the new people? Good. Hello. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. Did I say that better now? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all listening to me. It's kind of like, well, you didn't quite do it the way you always do it. Sorry. So we're going to be talking about successful outcomes, right? Right. And we talk about successful outcomes, but let's really dig deeper. Let's really figure out what a successful outcome is, how we should define it, and how we should get it, how we should achieve it, right? Yeah. So let's think about, yes, you all know that I am going to ask our base question because, of course, this is not a scripted show. It goes where we take it. And the base question is, of course, how can we define or decide what constitutes a successful outcome? How can we define it? If we don't define it, if we don't know what it is, well, how on earth are we going to achieve it, right? We have to figure out what a successful outcome is before we go any further. A lot of you have already answered this question. How exciting. And I think the first topic we're going to be talking about is defining a successful outcome by client expectations, right? Yeah, by client expectations, maybe even by contract. Wow, yeah. And what they want you to do. Oftentimes, this is true that successful outcome is defined by the issues that need to be solved. It's fairly obvious if we solve these issues, well, we've had a successful outcome, right? Yeah, so it's determined by the issues. I think the third one we're going to talk about is the fact that sometimes a successful outcome is not so clear and it's defined by the group, right? And the participant input. We all define the successful outcome. This is a true statement, too, that the outcome, it gets modified as the process goes forward, right? Yeah. And in order to define a successful outcome, as our final thought about this today, we're going to establish expectations, right? That's how we know that everybody's working towards the successful outcome, which a lot of you are talking about. Yeah, how do we know that they're really doing it? Well, let's establish some expectations, right? Now, we've decided how to define it, create it. How are we going to establish, how are we going to achieve a successful outcome? Yes, good point, everyone. A lot of people are talking about the fact that you need a clear understanding of the definition that we just did. You have to understand what that means. Everybody has to understand what it is that we're doing, what it is that's happening, what the successful outcome has been defined as, what it looks like, right? So that we all know that we're heading towards it. And we're doing something practical to get there, right? How do we create and establish successful effort? How about by team effort? We all work together. Sometimes we make even smaller teams that have more specific and narrow duties that report back to the whole, right? We might need to break into smaller groups so that we can get the pieces together to the whole. How about we create and establish a successful outcome by empathy, by thinking about the other folk? Remember always that empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. Empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. I'm going to lump these two together, I think. People are talking about a convivial atmosphere and about the civility rules and enthusiasm. And yes, the answer is that is a fabulous way to get people to reach their successful outcome. To make a real convivial atmosphere where the civility rules are carefully enforced and everybody feels enthusiastic. We all feel like, wow, we're really getting there. Things are happening. We're going to be fine. We're going to reach our successful outcome. Very, very important to have that idea, to have it all pulling forward, right? Yeah. So let's start. Let's start with defining what our successful outcome looks like. And we're going to start with client expectations. Even if your client is a group, even if your client you have volunteered, even if it's pro bono, because you're first starting out and you need to establish your reputation. You need to understand what the client expectations are. A lot of you are talking about a written contract. Yes. But the written contract, you have to be careful about defining successful outcome in it because it needs to be broad. Because you don't know exactly maybe you do. It depends on the issues, I suppose. But sometimes you don't know exactly what a successful outcome looks like. And you don't want someone to say, well, you've breached contract. You haven't done what you promised, even though you have reached a successful outcome. And it was the one that needed to be done now, the one that needed to be really, really finished now, right? Yeah. So that makes a big difference. And I think written contracts are mainly for monetary terms and also for broad expectations about time and amount of meetings and things like that. Although I always put in a clause that if we finish early, hey, we've reached our successful outcome early. Or if necessary, the time can be expanded. I like to have all kinds of modifying phrases in my contract because when it comes down to it, well, we're really not sure now, are we? Right? We're really not certain. We're really not, we know what it looks like, we know generally, but to put it specifically down in writing, don't know about that. However, I do know that I need enforcement powers in writing, right? Yes. I need to know in writing, right? Because, you know, people's words change unless you're dealing with somebody who you truly know their word is good. I mean, sometimes you're dealing with the same people all the time and you've kind of got the same deal all the time. I need to know what it is that I can do if someone refuses to comply. Right? As a practical matter. What power do I have? I want power over your employment. Right? I want power over dismissing you from the group. Right? Yeah. I want, in order to get the participants to really participate in a civil manner and really go forward, some of them don't want to. Right? Yeah. And there's a certain amount who kind of enjoy the negotiation, and they don't want to go back to their day job, so to speak. They kind of want to prolong the thing because, well, it's fun. There's food. There's negotiation. There's other folk. It makes you feel kind of important to be part of the group, which is part of the conviviality and part of the enthusiasm and part of the civility, but we need to go forward and get done, right? There'll be another group. It'll be fine. So you need to have in writing how what you can do. I need impact. I need to be able to say, if you don't comply with the civility rules and you continue to do that, the consequences will be, well, fill in the blank. And then if they continue to be uncooperative, enforce the consequences. I usually enforce consequences publicly in front of everyone because the bad behavior has been public in front of everyone, right? Right. Now, you have to be certain that you're being fair and that you have given someone every chance to reform and that you have been patient and like that. And civil, always civil, because we're models of the civility rules, right? Right. But there comes a time when we need an example, right? Yeah. And you need to have the power to make one. Mm-hmm. Client expectations of successful outcome. Mohammed and others are talking about frequent updates. Yes, let's keep them in the loop. Let's tell them what's going on. Let's give them updates, right? I do written updates quite a bit because I deal with big corporations. They go to sometimes a committee. And then they can ask questions. And then they can participate. They can have ideas. Why not? Yeah, the more the merrier. Mm-hmm. Ethan says, and others are saying, why don't you invite the client participation? Yes. Especially if the successful outcome is going to look a little differently than they had in mind, right? They need to understand where we are in the negotiation process. They need to understand what can be done at this point in time and that maybe we've got some steps to go before we can really reach the ultimate successful outcome to really end it, right? Yeah, sometimes there's some steps to go and people don't realize it. They think, well, this is how it's going to be. Let's get this done. And yes, this is true, but let's get this done might be too early in the game, right? Yeah. We might need to modify. We might need to think about it. We might need to say, let's think about that. We're going to work on that, right? Yeah. So we need to establish what the successful outcomes are, but sometimes we need to really just update, and sometimes we need the client to come so that they understand expectations have changed. Because they've still got the same expectations. Maybe they need to change. Maybe they're too big, right? So, yes, let's allow the client to participate. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Yes, Helen says allows the client to understand that the circumstances have changed. Allows the client to understand that the circumstances have changed. And they have sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so expectation needs to change too. Sometimes our successful outcome is defined by the issues, right? That's our next topic. How about outside activity, as a lot of you are talking about, right? Something has happened in the outside world, not in our group, that impacts our successful outcome. Might make it better, might make it sooner, might make it worse, might make it different, modified, because something has happened that gets us halfway there, maybe. Yay, team. And now we need to point out that, yes, we're on the right track, but we need to keep moving forward. We're not done. I see that a lot. Sometimes things move forward, and it's not even our doing. And maybe it is because there's been some media, but things kind of lurch forward. And we go, wow, that's fabulous, but not yet. Don't leave. We need to have our issues addressed, right? Yeah, Because sometimes some sort of a general social idea has been progressed forward, maybe even by government or whoever. But we've got a special niche. We've got special interest. Hi, not yet, right? Remember that we need something too. What causes a successful outcome to be issue-driven? Time constraints, right? Yeah. And Fred and others are saying the amount of dissension also within the group. Maybe even not within the group, but maybe just in general, there's a lots of different kinds of ideas, lots of opposing parties, lots of folk who are terribly interested and have different wants and needs. That may mean that we need to actually get together with them too. And we need to decide how far away we are. We need to decide if we're going to go forward or we're going to join forces, right? Yeah, sometimes there's all kinds of decisions to be made about outside factors and outside groups. Yes, the thing to remember, Mohammed says the thing to remember about outside groups, if you're going to connect with them and kind of pull together, is that they have leaders too, right? And those leaders don't want to lose their power. So you have to incorporate everyone in a way that's satisfactory, in a way that doesn't step on any toes, in a way that causes us, all of us, to move forward, because we're now in us, right, to move forward as a single group, right, and not just a group that has kind of folded into another, and they miss their old leader, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that goes to the amount of dissension, too. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sometimes this is true. The next topic is group and participant input defining the successful outcome. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the group defines the successful outcome. They define what they want. When they start out, they really don't know exactly what they want. They've got this idea, oftentimes, this idea of something that would be good to do, right? But they don't actually know what they want. They're not certain how to get it. It's all very up in the air, all very kind of confusing, right? And so they need help defining how to get there, right? Yeah. So you've got a basic, you've got your participants, they've got a basic idea of what needs to be done. Let's refine it so that we can define our successful outcome so that we can get to it, so that we can understand it, right? Mm-hmm. Suki says that oftentimes you have a basic agreement or a basic conflict and you need to have civility rules. Yes. Sometimes you have a very cohesive group. They're all pretty much in agreement. And they're pretty reasonable about the whole thing because they know that they need to find a practical solution and get something done. But they're really in agreement with each other that this is what needs to be done. And what we need is help in defining how to do it. Yeah. And that is very different than the group that's in conflict. Sometimes groups are in conflict. They all basically want the same successful outcome. They've all got the same general goal, but they're really in dissension. They're really not on the same page at all. They have different reasons for wanting it and different ideas on how to get there. Excuse me, took a sip of water. And they're kind of entrenched. They are. They're kind of insistent about it. So they've got different ideas of what successful outcome means. They define it differently. Maybe the final the final goal, but even not that. Sometimes what's a successful outcome is kind of something you need to think about, need to define, need to really get everybody on board with one successful outcome that we need to work towards, and then we can modify it. But how are we going to work towards 12? No. We need to get together as a group. We need to become a team. Yes. Yes, thank you. Lots of folk are talking about the civility rules. The civility rules at their core say we will not be rude to one another. Everybody's going to get their turn. We're not going to roll our eyes. We're not going to sigh. We're not going to bully anybody. And make noises with things in our pockets. I don't know, text the entire time. Yeah, no, we are going to act in a civil manner toward each other so that we can really get together and we can make a team, right? And as leader, we are models of civility. We never breach the civility rules. The reason being that we are in charge, and if we do it, then it gives everybody license to do it. They all go, well, Sue got angry and raised her voice. I guess I can do that too. No, we will not. Hmm? Yeah. People are asking about the group participant input defining the successful outcome and how you can have different reasons. How come there's dissension in the group? Sometimes you have a group that's very diverse, maybe even very large, but very diverse usually is the key to it. And you've got in your participant pool, you've got kind of agents, you've got representatives from different other groups that have sent somebody or somebody's participating. So they've really got definite opinions about what needs to be done. Now, they want the same outcome, but they're there for different reasons, and they have to understand that we are now working together. We are now a team. Yeah, people asking for an example. The cleanest example I've got is that in the United States, marijuana is illegal, right? In fact, we're having a big fight with the federal government at the moment because we have an administration that's somewhat intolerant. But the marijuana is illegal federally. Been that way forever. Groups that wanted to have marijuana legalized tried talking to the federal government and getting the rules changed for medical marijuana. Yeah. All kinds of different groups, very diverse, very different reasons. You had people with the groups that represent HIV. How about senior citizens with like macular degeneration and things like that? Different kind of diseases that are terribly painful or have muscle spasms and that kind of stuff. Marijuana is good for that. All kinds of groups. And then you have the people that are interested in selling. They want to have a shop. They want to sell it to you. You have the interest of the people who want to grow it legally, the farmers. You have the interests of the states who want to collect tax money. And probably half a dozen interests that I actually haven't named as we're sitting here. But you see, that's all kinds of groups that already have leaders. All kinds of groups that are very diverse. But they all want and probably don't like each other. A lot of the groups really have funny preconceived notions about other people that wanted to use marijuana legally. It wasn't them, of course, but other people were not good people that wanted to use marijuana legally. It was the weirdest thing. But all of them had a single goal, right? Yeah. The single goal was legalization. Well, we have to get together and fight forward together. And you had all kinds of extra leaders in there who wanted to be the face of it because then people would vote for them or keep them in their job or whatever. It was important media-wise. You had a media festival. So these people all had to get together. They had different interests, same goal, legalization. They had to get together and put it before the states. which was a really imaginative loophole, right? Because it's still federally illegal, and federal law is above state law. But some states, in fact, quite a few, have legalized marijuana within their state. Then they have a taste of the taxes, tremendously taxed. They call it a sin tax in kind of, you know, parlance. It's like a liquor tax. There's a tremendous amount of tax on liquor and cigarettes, and now marijuana. Just tons. And you've got a whole nother layer of employment surrounding the marijuana industry. You've got inspectors. You've got testers. You've got, all kinds of, like, revenue people and stuff. A whole bunch of new bureaucracy, which government loves. And new jobs, which government loves too, right? All funded, you guessed it, by the marijuana industry. So you had a lot of people in the room with different reasons, same goal. And they all had to fight forward to make sure that legalization occurred in their state, right? Yeah. So you have to, people have to understand that this is in their best interest to work together. Otherwise, they won't. They need to understand, I mean, it's nice to have social good type goals. Yeah, there were some of those people at the table also. But most of it was economics. Most of it was power, because that's really what it came down to. Not the theory of it would be a good thing, but the actual economics of this is what we're going to do and this is how much it's going to bring in. Right? Yeah. And the economics of really allowing for the states to have a say instead of just the federal government. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. People are talking about, Terrence and others are talking about research can shift opinions when you've got group participant input defining our successful outcome. Research can shift opinions. We send off teams to do research, right? And think about it. Remember when you're doing research that the internet is fabulous for finding anything that validates your side. But let's also look at all the arguments against so that we understand them, so that we can incorporate them in our plan. Let's not stop our research at just what agrees with us. Let's go forward and let's think about all the things that need to be that really need to be thought of, that really need to be analyzed. Because when you research all sides, sometimes you find out there's an unexpected impact also. Mm-hmm. And you want to know about it. You don't want to be unexpected, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the next one, that our successful outcome modifies as the process progresses. Ooh, it sure does. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is true, too. Elizabeth and others are saying that new issues sometimes arise. Sometimes, as we can use frequently, new issues frequently arise. We didn't think about that side of it. Uh-oh, wait a minute. We might need to modify, and I think we're going to. As we progress, we find stuff out. As we progress, we get different ideas. As we progress, we need to go forward and to really think about what it is that we're doing and think about, are we still, have we changed, have we redefined successful outcome? And if so, that's okay. But let us know it willingly. Let us know it consciously. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Alex and others are talking about the unexpected consequences of actions. A lot of people are giving examples. Yeah, sometimes you really think you've got it nailed. And the group makes a decision, and we go out and we implement. And then someone who was not at the table has an unexpected consequence of our actions. Or everybody has an unexpected consequence of our actions. Sometimes it affects us too. We have that with law sometimes when you draft a new law. Now, we have done it carefully, right? We have thought of all the angles, right? And we have drafted it cleanly. And then it goes out into the world. And people have to live under it. And then courts interpret it. And sometimes it's not exactly what we had in mind. It gets interpreted in a way that we never thought about. Pardon me, because it impacts in a way that we hadn't considered. And that's why, in order to avoid the unexpected consequences, aftermath, the need to go back to square one and redo it, for example, I like to call in an expert. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes what seems to be a fact, what seems to be good, isn't. And sometimes you don't realize that. I mean, you realize that your bigotries and things like that are not actually factual. But sometimes the subtleties, you just didn't think about it. Unexpected consequences. Yeah. Yes, this is true. Fred says that what seemed like a fact isn't. What seemed like a fact isn't. Turns out not to be. Turns out that's not actually a fact, that's just somebody's opinion. Or it's the way it's always been done. Yeah, it's comfort zone. The way it's always been done. Mm-hmm. People talk about the process. Mm-hmm. Grace says the process needs to be efficient and keep everyone in the loop. The process needs to be efficient and keep everyone in the loop. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's why you have a fabulous assistant who keeps everybody in the loop and really works on it. Mm-hmm. And is very efficient. We're having some discussion. We often have this when we talk about the process, about the people who are doing the process as an intern or versus paid. We have interns at Recipe for Peace now, and they're fabulous. We have a rule that they need to be a senior in college or above. We get a lot of MBAs, masters of business, people working on a business master's degree, because they're a little more involved, they're more mature, they will be more efficient, right? And they're doing it for a grade, and they want to get a good grade. Some of them are pass-fail, but either way, they're doing it for a grade and also for work experience, for the resume enhancer. Mm-hmm. So the process needs to be efficient to keep everybody in the loop. Some interns need more help than others, but they all need training and supervision, especially when they're brand new. So they take a lot of time. And some of them might or might not be real good at it. They might not make the cut. And they take a lot of time. Did I mention the part about taking a lot of time? And you really have to watch them. And we ask interns to stay more than one term as part of we actually give them a contract, what they're expected to do. Because if you're just there for a term, by the time we've got you straightened out and trained and you're on your own, you're pretty much leaving. And we have to start a new batch. And what we do is we rotate and we have interns help the new interns, right? And we ask that interns stay for about a year, an actual year or college year. Uh-huh. And that means that we've always got experienced ones helping to train the less experienced ones. And a lot of people come in, a lot of our interns, we do interview them. We don't just get them from a school. We actually interview them. And a lot of them are master's students, and they're all very efficient. It's kind of one of the things we look for, that they could be self-starters. You can afford it, and I know that sometimes this is an issue. If you can afford it, I very much am in favor of a paid position. Really seriously in favor of having someone with a paid position. The reason being that they stay and they're efficient and they help with the interns and the volunteers and everybody else and they keep track so that you don't blow a deadline. They keep track of who's meeting where. They keep track of keeping track of what your participants are doing so we can see that we're all really heading in the same direction. And if something's going kind of wonky, then they tell you and you fix it. But you don't have to do the keeping track. You do the what's going on. Does that make sense? Yeah. And it's very, very important to have somebody who's that efficient if you can possibly afford it. Or maybe even go, what's that thing called where you get a CEO of a company for a year? Even that, they're brand new in, right? And I've kept my assistant for many years, and I pay her a lavish amount of money because she's worth it. Yes. The good assistant is absolutely priceless. Yeah, let's go on to establish expectations because we're going to run out of time. And I know some of you really like the recipe, and we don't always get to them. Establish expectations. That's under leadership for us to do. And it really means I have a set of things that needs to be done. I'm going to divide them up amongst you, and everybody's going to do them, which is why you need someone to keep track. Because sometimes people think they are doing something, but they are not doing something helpful. It's just not good. So you need to have somebody to keep track of progress too, which would be hopefully a person in your employ who is really, really good. Yeah, because interns also have no enforcement. Who cares? They're going to leave. Yeah, so, and also when you have clear expectations, established expectations, the instructions need to be very clear. Now, I say that with trepidation because sometimes an instruction that seems very clear to me as leader, to you as leader, and it seems obvious, isn't, right? They haven't understood it. They haven't understood what their role is going to be. They haven't understood how or why or any of those things, right? Yeah. You have to have agreement, right? And you need to really establish what it is that we need to do and make your instructions very clear. I like people to repeat the instructions to me. Not verbatim. I like them to tell me what it is they think they're going to be doing next. Talk to me. Tell me what it is that you're going to be doing next. Very important. Because it tells me if you've really understood what you're supposed to do. Right? Yeah. People are talking about established expectations with clear instructions that you say more than once in different ways. Because statistically, studies have shown that the human mind doesn't yet generally hear it the first time. You have to say it like 3 times in order to get people to understand what it is they're doing, especially if it's something outside of their comfort zone. No, I do not make the participant parrot me when I ask them to repeat the instructions, just in their own words, just however it is they would say it, that's how they need to say it. Yes, we need to have a lot of folks are going for frequent checkups and check-in and updates so that you know what's going on as leader. My assistant coordinates that, and it's fabulous. Generally speaking, that it's something that you need to have someone keep track of. Okay. Let's go for team effort, right? Choose your team carefully and to be complementary to each other. Not necessarily everybody who has the same skill set in one team. Let's spread the skill sets around so that we can get more different kinds of expertise, right? Yeah. Also, if you know that someone's an expert, hey, why not use them? Because they'll really be a good addition to the ideas of the group. Yes, people are asking about whether team members should revolve. As in, you don't stay in the same team for the whole process. This week you're in this team, this week you're in the next team. Everybody plays musical chairs. I've seen that as an idea. It does generate new ideas. We'll give it that. It's kind of a, I don't want to call it a game, but it's kind of a, all right, it's something you do if you have a lot of time, if you don't have time constraints. And the people inherently have something in common, like they all work for the same organization. It works better that way, right? Yes. We've done as an exercise for full-day seminars revolving teams, it does lead you to meet new people. It does lead you to get new ideas, new blood, so to speak. I will do it if we have time and the whole, and we have no time constraints, and the whole process is bogging down. We've been working on it for a while, and it's just starting to kind of bog down. We're saying the same things. It's just we're not pulling the trigger. We're not going forward. We're just kind of dancing in circles. If that's the case, reorganizing teams will be an interesting experiment and helpful because you'll have new people to talk to, new people to think about their ideas. How do I do it is the question. I have done it if we're going to be together for quite some time, and the thing that will need to be freshened up, right? I've seen this corporate. I will actually have people take a number out of a hat and join and make teams like that if the people are fairly equally matched in skill, right? Right. People do like that, and it does breathe new life into the whole group and the issues and to get it done, right? Because you have incentive now to get it done. You've got new folk. You've got new ideas. Let's think about it. Let's get it done, right? Yeah. And so, yes, I have indeed revolved. Depends on the situation. Depends on how well-known a commodity, how well-known your client is to you, too, and whether or not that would be a good idea. But revolving team members does give them a fresh perspective. This is true. We're going to go down to empathy, right? Because that's the way you do create a successful outcome, right? Yeah. Because you understand the other people in the room, even if the other people are a very, very known to you group, we're still going to need to have some empathy. We're still going to understand things. And even if they've been in this group before, sometimes they change their mind. We've got invisible participants sometimes. So let's do empathy. Let's do it as a way to create a successful outcome, because then we'll all want to work together with each other better. We'll all want to work together because, well, it's a good idea, and we're all in this together, and we're a team. We're going to go forward, right? Remember that empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. Mm-hmm. In order to have some empathy, let's break out the 5W questions. Yes, thank you. Lots of folk are talking about the 5W questions already. Mm-hmm. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. As you can see, these questions reveal the underlying issues, right? They figure out where's that coming from. And one of the most important things to know is how it got there, which is why we're going to break out all the 5W questions. Mm-hmm. Do you use them all at the same time? Not necessarily. Do you use them in the order I just said them? Well, also not necessarily. But somewhere along the line, you're going to want to have the answers to these questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Mm-hmm. Because it will give you empathy and understanding. And that's the ticket, and you use it on the opposition also, right? You use it on everybody because you want to understand why. And there is indeed a difference, as I was going to say before I took a sip of water. Lost my train of thought. There is indeed a difference that quite a few people are asking about. Yes. Yes, William and others are talking about the idea of learned versus experienced opinions. Learned opinions are things that you were taught by somebody you respected, maybe even as a child. They have to do with your culture. Could be corporate culture. Doesn't have to be an ethnic culture. Could be family dynamic, right? But you really think that those things are facts because to you they are. And it doesn't occur to you that they might not be. They're facts. Facts are important, right? Yeah. Well, let's think about them. But the other side of it is sometimes people have ideas due to their life experiences. And we've all got some, right? And those, you have to point out, they're not the same issues, not the same people, not the same time, right? New to each other, new to the group, new to the issues. Let's all think like we'd never done it before, because we haven't in this specific time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, a lot of times people do, the 5W questions do reveal the underlying issues, and they also reveal if something is a fact in someone's mind that truly isn't really a fact, right? Preconceived notions, yes, people come in with them. Yes, exactly. You guys have heard me say this, but the idea is not necessarily, because we're not together long enough and we're not psychiatrists, not necessarily to eliminate people's preconceived notions that they came in with. All right, people are calling it bias and bigotry and like that. Possibly extends to that level. Our goal is not to reform them. We don't have time or patience to work on that. Our goal is that at this time, with these people on these issues, we will work together to reach a successful outcome. Even though you've got all kinds of weird ideas. Nope. At this time, with these people and these issues, we're going to reach a successful outcome. We're going to reach accord, right? We're actually going to negotiate what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll make a working relationship. You're not required to be friends. People mistake that. They think we need to be friends. No, you don't need to be friends. You need to have a good working relationship, right? And when this working relationship, this idea that we can work with each other takes hold, then the next time somebody goes to negotiate, they will think about it. And they will not just say, well, there's only, I don't know, these issues and we'll never deal with each other again. No. We're going to create a working relationship so that we get to our successful outcome now. And the next time the issues come up, because similar things will happen, hey, we know who to talk to. I may still have bias. Well, I don't, but your participants might still have bias against the group that this person belongs to. But they can understand that they can deal with this person of that group because they're exceptional. That's all we need. We need a working relationship and an idea that someone is exceptional. Perfect. And next time they have the problems, they'll know who to call. They won't even need you, which is my goal because I have enough clients. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Muhammad says it will extend to future working relationships. Exactly. The feelings, the idea that you can work together will extend to future working relationships. It was successful. We had our successful outcome, right? Mm-hmm. Our last topic, we're going to run out of time. We may not make the recipes. If not, I apologize, and we'll do it next time. Because we had such a lovely discussion. The next topic is convivial atmosphere and helps create a successful outcome. And one of the ways to create the convivial atmosphere is, yes, let's all say it together because it's the only rules the Recipe for Peace now has, is the civility rules. The civility rules at their base say we will not be rude to one another. We will not be rude to one another. We will be civil. As leader, we must model the civility rules. I don't care how awful someone is. Honest to God, I don't care if they are really, really getting on your last nerve. We will maintain a civil demeanor. And remember at the beginning of the show, we talked about consequences that we can enforce for violating the civility rules, right? We can enforce those. We have power. But we will always be civil and act in an enthusiastic manner towards our participants and, in all truth and honesty, towards everybody, towards opposition, towards experts, towards the people we're dealing with. We will act in a civil manner because it makes for a more convivial atmosphere. If people feel threatened, if people feel kind of stressed, if people feel, oh, this isn't a very positive experience, they won't work hard and they won't come. Well, gee willikers, we need you to work hard and to come, and we need to reach our successful outcome. And I know that this is a complete surprise to our participants. Try it. You'll find out it's a complete surprise to them. For the life of me, I've been doing this for more than 30 years. I don't know why this is a surprise to people. If you tell people that the faster we get this done, the faster we get out of here, and the faster we don't have to see each other anymore until the next time. They go, oh, that's a good point. Well, gee willikers, you'd think that they would know that, but they don't. So tell them, the more enthusiastic and the more hard we work, faster we're finished. Because it will not be obvious to them, and I don't know why, but it's not. It seems to be an extreme revelation. Faster we're done. Convivial atmosphere, enthusiasm, civility. Yes, we will take turns speaking. I like everybody to speak. Not always, but there's always some people who are really outgoing and really have opinions and are always talking. I actually am one of those people. That doesn't surprise you. When I'm in a group, I have to actually remember and check myself that I am not accidentally taking over the conversation. Even though I'm not leader or I'm participating in some way, even if it's social, I have to remember not to dominate because it's civil. It's not civil to not let other people have their turn and kind of be on top of them. You know what I mean? Yeah, I have to actually think about that and remember to be quiet and let people have their say and not interrupt. Because I'm enthusiastic and I want to go, oh, no, wait a minute. That's not how the way to, nope. You got to remember not to do that. It's very important because most of us are extroverts. I know that I am. And I will accidentally dominate the conversation. I really will. And then I'll realize, darn it, that's what I'm doing. And I will back off and be silent and let everybody take their turn. I don't even do it rudely. It just happens, right? So you have to remember that everybody gets their turn. I actually have points in the negotiation, especially in the beginning, where everybody takes a turn for a certain amount of time, which we actually time out, so everybody gets their fair share. And I make everybody talk and everybody say what it is they think. Because there are always those people who think deep things, but they don't say it. They don't participate. They don't open their mouths. They sit in the back and they just kind of blend in. No, I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think. I want to know what it is that is your opinion, right? Yeah. And not have you do that. Not have you kind of sink into the background. Mm-hmm. Now, that's an interesting point. Yeah, we do indeed time them. People have all kinds of ideas about timing. I actually like a egg timer, a cooking timer. And because if you do it by your cell phone and like that and have somebody call time, then everybody feels that somehow they've been cheated of their time, right? And this way it goes tick, 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 ding, and everybody knows they've had the same. It's just a matter of civility, right? And people are asking if I will allow someone who is reticent to speak or just shy or whatever, to give their time to someone they agree with so that they can have more time to be persuasive. No, is my general idea. If we're doing the around the room, everybody tell me what you think about this, I want you to tell me what you think about this. And I don't want someone else to tell what you think. That makes sense? Yeah. Because it's your moment to talk to us. I want to hear from you. I want to hear your voice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's always invisible, we're going to run out of time. There's always invisible participants in the room. Somebody who your participants are talking it over with. I would say report back to, but that seems formal. But somebody who's influencing your participants. We'd like to know who they are, and we'd like them to come. They're invited to join us, right? Yeah, because they're having an influence. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have someone who is an invisible participant who wishes to remain anonymous. Mm-hmm. For practical reasons, often. They don't want to be nagged. They don't want their name to be associated with this particular viewpoint just in case it doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. You must respect that. If you ask somebody for help for their expert opinion and they say, well, I don't want anybody to know that I told you this, never tell. Because that has to do with your reputation. And you cannot create a successful outcome if you don't have a reputation for trustworthiness and for success, really. Yeah, you get a reputation as being able to pull a rabbit out of a hat, which is an Americanism, I know. But it means you've really gotten a negotiated outcome, reached a successful outcome when nobody else really could, when it really wasn't working, right? And that's a fabulous reputation to have. Let's maintain that. Let's go for it. It's very important that your reputation is stellar. And of course it is because you're very good at this, right? Right, yes. ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. We are out of time. Next time we will do the fabulous recipes. I know, but we've had such a wonderful discussion. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your participation. If you want to find us, wordrecipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.